We are here live on Taxation is Theft, and I have a really awesome guest with me today, somebody that I'm really excited to have on because this is somebody that I've been following for probably over a decade, learning a lot of information from him, and well, let me just introduce him. Joe Bannister, I don't think I can introduce you in a way that gives you enough credit as you deserve because you've put yourself out there, you've revealed a lot of information, and you've kind of gone head to head with the IRS, which is like something nobody in their right mind would really want to do. It's because everybody's so afraid of this kind of unchecked power that they have. So for one, I want to commend you on that. It's just really an honor to have you on the show. And so I guess let me kind of introduce you or allow you to introduce yourself a little bit further by asking you kind of what's your history? You've worked for the IRS and you don't anymore. And this kind of had to do with your discovery that I discovered, which I thought was extremely fascinating. So what's the story there?
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for having me on your show. I'll try to give the briefest thumbnail that I can. I worked for the IRS from 1993 through 1999 as a special agent in the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I expected to spend a full 20-year career there.
I think we're losing your signal. Of course, this would happen.
A little disruption.
Okay. I think you're back.
Okay. Can you hear
So,
me good?
yeah. So you mentioned you were intending originally to spend 20 years there.
Yeah, because being a law enforcement position, it's a 20-year period to retirement rather than 30 or 40 years. But about 3 years into that 5-year period, I began to investigate the income tax itself. Prior to that point, I couldn't have been a better cheerleader for the income tax system. A certified public accountant, a degree in accounting from San Jose State University. My entire professional life revolved around the income tax. And then, that first 3 years in the IRS, here I am a gun-toting, badge-carrying IRS investigator, going out and investigating people, trying to see to it that if they're convicted for their crimes, they're put in prison. So, couldn't really have been a better advocate, or at least somebody that was accepting of the system, the status quo as it was. But about 3 years into that 5-year career, during 1997 and 1998, I was challenged to look deeper into the income tax laws, the regulations, the court cases, basically aspects of the income tax that I was never taught as a CPA, getting a degree in accounting. That might sound strange to people, but it really is kind of an introductory curriculum that you're generally exposed to. Pamphlets and textbooks and things like that, as opposed to, the actual black letter laws, which of course are very voluminous, and you can see why they'd want to summarize them. But that's where a lot of the details were that I never got exposed to. So I began to expose myself to those details, and came to some really disheartening conclusions, or at least preliminary conclusions. During that 2-year period, I was still going to work every day as an IRS criminal investigator, but nights, weekends, days off would just pound at the research and investigation to determine if these claims that the income tax wasn't, was being illegally administered and enforced were actually true. Because to me, having taken an oath to support and defend the Constitution, in addition to my own, upbringing as a Roman Catholic, somebody that's supposed to not bear false witness against their neighbor, not supposed to steal or help anyone else steal from others. I felt I had a duty to get to the bottom of it. And if anything, if I had any bias at all, it was that, the income tax had to be legitimate, because it had been in existence for so long, but I had to find it out for myself.
Yeah. So this is an interesting question I have for you. So you say this was, you wanted to support the Constitution and what was legal and what wasn't. Do you see if the income tax were somehow legal and constitutional, would you see that as a valid thing, or do you still take it as a moral objection, thou shalt not steal, or from your neighbor? Do you see it as kind of an immoral act as well, even if it were somehow constitutional?
Well, I believe I understand to some extent the arguments that people will say about taxation being theft, and I don't want to appear as if I'm an enemy to that concept or that belief whatsoever. I guess though I more adhere to the concept that the Constitution, there is some permission, shall we say, and I know there's arguments about, well, I wasn't alive when the Constitution was ratified or
Right.
proposed, but setting that aside, at least for purposes of this show or my presentation, that there's some amount of permission that was acknowledged or agreed to in the Constitution, and severe limitations were actually placed into the Constitution, knowing how taxation can be used to throttle people, to implement tyranny, all these things that the founding fathers were aware of. And
Sure.
so, I believe that to the extent that permission could be granted, shall we say, that there's a certain level of permission granted in the Constitution. It's like, hey, we're going to give you these powers, we're going to severely limit those powers, and then we're going to hold you to those limited powers that we gave you. And I think anybody that will take a look at the Constitution will see that it was a pretty darn good effort for 1789 at least. And I think it was quite remarkable and magnificent. I'm not saying that that is the best we can do, but I guess that's where I'd say I come down in terms of the limitations. I think are severe in the Constitution, and I think if they were paid attention to. And of course, it's always up to us, the people, right? It's up to the people
Right.
that are
Right. The
in threat
paper
of
doesn't
being
protect
tyrannized.
itself.
Right. So anyway, so I think, actually, if it was, if the income tax was enforced and administered according to the Constitution and according to the laws that are actually on the books, then the income tax would only be being paid by non-resident aliens and foreign corporations, because that and Americans, maybe in certain limited cases, when they go to work abroad or they live abroad, outside the country for any length of time. That's, when people say there is no law, well, I think there's more to the story than that. There are laws and they're on the books, but who do those laws actually apply to? And
Right.
the biggest lie is that when you really look at the history of the income tax laws all the way back to 1913, it's clear that those income tax laws never embraced the average American living and working in America, in the United States. And so that's where all the tyranny, the lying, the deceit, the theft actually comes into play for everyone. Because setting aside an argument about when theft begins, it certainly, I think everybody agrees, it begins if the government is administering and enforcing a tax beyond what the laws passed by Congress and signed by the president allow. And that,
Sure.
that's
Yeah,
certainly
and
where.
I've always kind of said, as well, I actually talked to you about this earlier. Like, a lot of people don't really join this liberty movement until they've kind of found themselves on the wrong end of the government. And for me, I never took up such a big issue with the income tax until I got like a tax bill that said I owe, tens of thousands of dollars. And then it's like, wait. But if they had maybe, stayed within the Constitution, if they had maybe, I mean, if they would have taxed me at like a 0.5% or 1%, and I got a bill for that, I might have just said, okay, sure, I'll pay this. And I think a lot of people still, they still do that today. They don't realize how much they're paying. So I think that is a valid point that you know, the government is so out of control as far as what it's taxing now constitutionally. If we can't even get it back to the Constitution, we're going to have a pretty hard time getting it reined in any further than that. So it's you know, in any event, that is an excellent case, and I think it shows that the government is abusing its power in the way that they collect. So even if you say, okay, we do need taxes for certain things, we can at least point out that they're enforcing it illegally, or you know, using coercive threats in order to get people to pay. I don't know if those are in line with your opinions or not, but
No,
that as far as I see it.
you're making excellent, excellent points, and I can also see why people who see such a broken system will say, "Are you kidding me? Like, you actually put any faith in the Constitution and in these laws?" I get it. I can see why faith is lost by people. I guess I'm seeing how many years, how many hundreds of years it went and was relatively ironclad. And again, I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's certainly a lot better than I think I could have done, back in 1789. And so I'm all for listening to people's ideas about how to make things better. 1789 was a lot better than, 1189 and 989, right? I mean, human beings, we like to progress and do better. So I keep my mind open for that. But I do think that a lot of the problem is just plain old deceit and lying by the powers that be that aren't the people who are really pulling the strings of the Congress and the presidents and the Supreme Courts. And so we, the people, need to be a lot more vigilant no matter what system we have. If you think about a homeowners association, okay, that's pretty much voluntary, right? You can volunteer into owning a condo. And you can run for the board, but when you buy the condo, did you vote for the president of the HOA? You didn't. You weren't there for that. But no matter what, there's going to be these deficiencies, shall we say, in getting along and making things run smoothly. So anyway,
Absolutely.
I'm open for the debate. I enjoy it.
All right. So I'm going to ask you a question that I get asked a lot, and I'd love to say no, but unfortunately the answer isn't no yet. Do you pay income tax? And this is an especially interesting question because, of course, you're clearly not in jail. And the assumption is that if you don't pay, you're going to go to jail.
Well, that's a loaded question, but I'll be completely frank about myself. The last time that I filed a 1040 federal income tax return was 1998. And I don't say that to boast or to as any challenge to the IRS or the Department of Justice or anyone. And I certainly don't mean it to be like, hey, Joe hasn't filed in all these years. I'm not going to either. And that's why it's not really a yes or no answer. So I'm a bit verbose here. But I want to give the whole truth, shall we say?
All right.
And so no, I you know I'm I've been I was researching the tax laws prior to going into the IRS while I work there, when I resigned, if we get a chance to talk about that later, and of course for the last 19 years since then. So we were kind of talking about that really amazing video that you put together
Thank you.
about where it said he refuses to pay his taxes and how that's not accurate because I want to obey the law. I believe I have a moral duty to obey the law, but I also know what the law says. I've read it. I'm expected. I take all the responsibility. Ask the IRS. We're supposed to assess ourselves and fill out these forms and figure these things out for ourselves. And I've not only done that, but I've consulted with scores of attorneys and CPAs to check my work. And of course, the IRS, for a number of years after I didn't file a tax return, I kept paying money into the IRS. And people might think I'm crazy for doing that, but I wanted to show without any question that it wasn't about the money. And this kind of gets into more the warning part of my answer. And that is that, as people will know who have really followed my story closely, it's no cakewalk, doing the right thing or following the law as you see it, if the IRS sees it a little differently. because they are the proverbial 800-pound gorilla who will sit on you until you can't breathe anymore and you cry uncle. So, you know, that's why I say I don't say it to brag or to say, hey, come join me. I just know that for myself, having had a job where my job was to investigate somebody, find that they had broken a law, get them convicted, you know, at least bring the evidence to the prosecutor to get them convicted and put them into prison. And so, you know, I believe that I need to be consistent with my research, my investigation, my beliefs. And about all I can do is encourage other people to educate themselves as Americans. And together, we can beat back the tyranny of taxation. Some people would like it beat back completely. And of course, that'd be nice. And we can all hope and work for that. But in the meantime, we can certainly beat back this horrible encroachment where basically the IRS has no rules to follow. So it's kind of a long-winded answer, but I hope that that gives it the whole truth.
Yeah, and I think so kind of I want to clarify earlier, so this video for anyone watching that might have seen it, it's the one that says there's no law that says, or there's a bounty out for $300,000 if you can find the law that says you need to pay taxes. And I guess in this video, I said that that you hadn't paid your taxes. And what you're basically asserting is that there are no your taxes if you're not liable. Is that right?
Right. And using the word, and you know, this isn't a trying to get gotcha on Dan, but saying refusing, like in other words, oh, it's something that I owe or I have a duty to do, but I'm refusing to do it out of some kind of civil disobedience. I'm not castigating those who might choose civil disobedience, but there's, you know, the beating that you're going to get from the civil disobedience. But I'm just saying, I think refusing to do something makes it sound like I have a duty to do something and I'm refusing to do that duty. And I'm saying that if you do take a look, you, the average American, you'll come to the same conclusions that I did. And that's what I'm inviting people to do. I don't want them to believe me, but they can certainly believe that I had a really nice career at the IRS and I was 15 years away from a really nice retirement. And so I had every incentive to keep my mouth shut and just look the other way. And I decided it was important enough to, you know, to abide by my oath, abide by my morals and ethics as a CPA, and you know, not be quiet about it. And so that's what I advocate, is people to educate themselves. And if they decide after educating themselves that they're going to stop cooperating with the IRS or they're going to not cooperate in quite the way they used to, you know, those are all things that each person's own evaluation has to be, but there's no cookie cutter approaches that I'm aware of. The IRS is still out there grinding people up. And so I'm not a cheerleader for taking on the IRS one-on-one, but I am a cheerleader on educating the jury pool, which we're all potentially members of, and stopping this process of political prisoners, you know, being sent to prison over income taxes that they don't actually owe.
Right. And so now, and kind of to that point, I mean, you've said a few things. One is that you might see the law one way and the IRS sees it another way. So even if you kind of, you know, do your research and determine that you're not liable for a tax, the IRS still, you know, they're the 900-pound gorilla that still might come after you. And that's kind of what happened to you, right? They came after you a few times after you, I don't want to say refused to file, but didn't file, claiming that they wanted you to file. Isn't that kind of, but you, I mean, you worked for them for a while. So you kind of, you knew enough to kind of, to beat them. Is that kind of an accurate?
Well, in some ways, maybe I'll put it like this. Actually, when I was prosecuted, I was indicted in November 2004 and tried in June of 2005. And this was already after, remember how I said the last tax return that I had filed was 1998. So that means 1999, 2000, 01, 02, 03, 04, hadn't filed any tax returns because I, you know, reevaluated, I wasn't required to. Then I was indicted on fraud and conspiracy charges completely unrelated to whether or not I had filed a tax return. So right off the bat, that should give people some inclination that, well, wait a second, if Joe hadn't filed all those years a tax return and the government knew it, and the government tells us it's a crime, and yet they didn't charge Bannister with that in 2004, what's up with that? They go after this other issue with a client, and which is what they did. They completely ignored my personal circumstances. And so my trial in 2005 had nothing to do with what I was doing with personal, personally filing a tax return. It did come up a bit about, remember how I said a little earlier that I had paid money in without filing a tax return? Because again, it wasn't about the money, but it was certainly about me signing a government form, a government tax return, swearing that I owed money, that all my research, very heartfelt and sincere research showed I didn't have to sign. So, I wasn't about to do that, but yet I still paid in money for many, many years. And so that did come up in my trial that, like, wow, well, I guess you couldn't have been about lining your pockets, Bannister, if you paid it a bunch of money into the IRS every year for many years. So anyway, that was what the trial was about. And it was a criminal trial. And again, I think that's somewhat addressed in your video. It was one criminal trial. There were four counts against me, four felony counts, one for conspiracy, conspiring with this other client, and then three charges of preparing a false income tax return. So there were four felony counts altogether. And in June of 2005 in Sacramento, California, I was acquitted of all those charges, deservedly so. And of course, criminal jury verdicts are unanimous. And I learned after the trial that not a single juror ever wanted to convict and had to be swayed to acquit. So it gives you some idea. And I'm still friends with a couple of the jurors, one I communicate with frequently, or at least a few times a year. So the jurors were scratching their heads like, wait, they put this guy on this big, huge trial, and every witness that's paraded up on the witness stand has nothing but either has nothing bad to say about the guy or has, can only say good things about the guy. And they're just scratching their heads like, why are we here? And so that's what the government was willing to do to me, to shut me up, discredit me. That's not all they've done to me, but that was the biggest bite. That was the biggest arrow they shot at my back. And anyway.
I'm already thinking this needs to be like the next big, civil trial, not like a civil rights trial movie or something. Like, the next, we need to make a movie about this. We need a script. We need to hire all the greatest actors and everything. And because I mean, it really sounds like, I can't even think of like A Few Good Men or something. Like, it just seems like there'd be this really crazy trial that we'd see, and then it would be one of those things where at the end you're like, oh, this was a true story. Holy shit!
Well, you're right. I don't know if a movie will ever be made, but you're right about the trial itself. I mean, just one example, at least one. The expert, the IRS agent expert with 30 years experience, gets up on the witness stand and he's quizzed about these tax returns that the government claimed I had prepared falsely. And we on the defense knew that there was nothing false about the tax forms or any of the attachments. So we walked the agent through almost line by line, but at least page by page. Is there anything false about this paragraph? Is there anything false about this page? Is there anything false? No, 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 no. So the government witness, who's supposed to be showing all these false, aspects of these forms I prepared, is saying there's nothing false about them. Yeah. And asking the special agent who investigated me, did you see any evidence of a conspiracy? No. Well, wait a second. Isn't Bannister on trial for conspiracy? So, it kind of went like that. And of course, that wasn't any surprise to me because, again, the purpose of the criminal trial was to silence me, discredit me, You know, bad things can happen in prison too. So all kinds of hopes that the government had, and thankfully the jury was paying attention and seeing that the government's case was just non-existent, but they brought it on anyway.
And this sounds like, you know, and this is probably distorted too, just because there's a lot of, you know, because this stuff isn't really put out there. I know I should have gone to you in the first place to get your, you know, your direct, you know, straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak. But like there, like from what I'm hearing about this sounds like what I know about, the Irwin Schiff trial, where they were trying to ban his book. And I remember like they were discussing whether or not they were trying to accuse him of writing a book that would tell people to do something illegal. And they were arguing over whether or not telling someone not to file was telling someone to do something or not do something that was illegal. And never during the trial did they ever bring up, well, is there anything in this book that's actually false? Is there anything that he's saying in this book that's a lie? And that right. sounds like the same, you know, the same kind of story there.
Yes. I mean, and that, again, that's why I'm not a cheerleader for, you know, urging and encouraging people to go out and duel with the IRS, because the only way that you can get a jury of your peers, generally, the only way to get a jury of your peers to evaluate your conduct is to be criminally charged and face federal prison. The IRS does the majority of its dirty deeds civilly, or what they call administratively, all within the bureaucracy. And a judge never even sees your case. If a judge sees your case civilly, it's a tax court judge, which is really just a former IRS agent who got a law degree. So the deck is hugely stacked. And again, that's why, you know, my advocacy, my mission is to just enlighten as many people as I can, because one by one, or even the small ragtag groups, you know, we get chewed up, and we need more Americans to awaken and be upset. I mean, how many Americans get upset when they get cut off on the way home from work?
Yeah.
How many they get cut? They get their mechanic overcharges them $200 for some work that didn't need to be done. But what about if the, you know, the IRS?
Yeah, they're paying that every week to the IRS. And
yeah.
So I want to ask. You said that you were still paying when you were still paying some money to the IRS. You mentioned that you were doing that because you filled out some forms, which by your research you didn't need to fill out because you weren't the person that applied to. There's a guy, Dave Champion, which we talked about him earlier. I know you know him, who he is. And he claims that when you sign a W-4 or a W-9, that you're actually committing perjury. And it's kind of his argument. You know, he accepts that the IRS is happy to have you commit perjury, and they'll never charge you for perjury because they want you to fill out that form. But he says that, you know, when your HR, you know, your employer tells you to fill out one of these forms, they're asking you to commit perjury because you are not a quote unquote U.S. person who is obligated to withholding or to pay the income tax or anything like that. Is that really true?
Well, first, maybe I'll just clarify that in terms of the years that I paid money in, there were no forms that I was aware of, you know, that I submitted. I did submit lots of letters and questions, inquiries directly to the IRS, a whole bunch, in addition to traveling to Washington, D.C. with other groups of people and going to the House leadership, to the Senate leadership, to the judicial leadership, to the president. This was back when Bill Clinton was in office, but literally going to the White House and meeting with his chief economic advisor. I think some of this is on my website, agentfortruth.com, some of these videos. So I did everything I could. I really think I did a fair amount of due diligence to make sure as far as what forms, if any, needed to be filed. So no, there was no form. It was just literally a check, payments to the IRS with no form swearing that I owed the money. But then dovetailing to what you said about Dave Champion, W4s, you know, my best understanding and awareness is that he's correct in the sense that the withholding, there's different subtitles of Title 26, and I might get too much into the weeds, okay? But let's just say that the basic paycheck withholding that is in existence, which would encompass or routinely encompasses that W-4 form. So without getting into the statutes and all that kind of stuff, but just to point out to people, that W-4 form, as I best understand it, is indicative of something that, you know, a non-resident alien, or like I said before, some of these foreigners who might come to work in the U.S. So I believe what you're describing Dave to be saying is that as an American living and working in this country, if you actually look at the statutes and the regulations that apply to withholding, they apply to people other than Americans living and working in the United States. Does that make sense? So
yeah,
if you're filling out a W-4 that is a form in the scheme or in the mechanisms of withholding that applies to non-Americans, you know, or foreigners coming to work here, and you're an American working here, well, then that form isn't applicable to your circumstances. However, go to any job across the country. You can be in El Paso, Texas, or Billings, Montana, or New York, and they're going to give you a W-4 to fill out with your, you know, initial paperwork. So, you know, I think Dave makes a good point, and one that everybody can recognize what a W-4 is. And then the W-2 follows at the end of the year, telling the IRS how much you made, how much was withheld, et cetera. But I'm being a little bit long-winded. But the W-4, if you actually, most 99.9% of America, that's all they see is a W-4 with the, you know, several lines on it. But there's oodles of statutes and regulations behind that form that form the reason for that form even being in existence.
Right.
And I think that's what Dave's trying to point out, that you're signing a form that actually doesn't apply to your circumstances, but try telling that to the people who want to hire you and they'll look at you like you have two heads.
Yeah. And I've tried. So it really is interesting. And so this actually brings me to the next question, because I get asked this all the time. You know, people are asking me, how do I not pay taxes? And of course, I don't have an answer, because like you said, there's no cookie cutter answer to not pay. And of course, I guess that's also a loaded question, because they say, how do I not pay my taxes? Well, they're not your taxes. But I've been talking to somebody who kind of advocates what he does, which is he basically says, okay, there's no way out of filing the W-4, so he files it, or a W-9 if your employer will accept it. But what happens is at the end of the year or within a couple of years, the IRS likes to do a substitute file. And so what he says is that at the end of the year when the employer sends the W-2, what he does is he actually disputes the W-2 with the IRS, and he's had some success in where the IRS receives the W-2, and so of course they build this this file of all the money that, you know, everything that they know about you, so that eventually they can do a substitute file and say this is what you owe. And his claim is that when you dispute that and say, yes, they gave me money, but it wasn't quote unquote wages, that the IRS will then update their records, zero out that amount, and then they don't have any amount to come after you for a substitute file. Have you heard of this practice? Do you know if it's true? Does it work?
I know at least one person that has, you know, drilled down into the bowels of the statutes and the regulations and has had some success with a, if not that process that you described, kind of a similar one. But I'd say it's very tenuous, and there's no guarantees whatsoever. The rule of thumb is that the IRS doesn't pay attention to anything you submit to them unless it has a check with, you know, paying them a bunch of money and a tax form swearing that you owe the money. If you try to write them and ask questions, and you know, they're likely gonna designate you as a troublemaker and just start, you know, throttling you with everything that they can. The better choice, in my opinion, and the opinion of the people that I hang with, is to write to your congressman, because at least your congressman won't necessarily dime you off to the IRS or start harassing you like the IRS will. But I guess I'll say that in principle, for those who are able to take a chance like that, I do know some circumstances where people have successfully kind of made the IRS immobilize them, shall we say, by pointing out very meticulously and at the proper junctures what the law actually says. But it's a super tenuous issue, and only people that I are really experts that I happen to, you know, interact with from time to time. So it's not something I think many of your listeners could just jump out and try. So I don't know if that really answers the question. I think that I have seen it work in limited circumstances, because of course it is the truth, but the IRS just tends to ignore these things. And of course, if they ignore what you send them, they just move along with their dance card of, you know, grinding you up, and who's going to stop them?
Right. That's really a good point. It really comes back to, you know, they're the 900-pound gorilla. So I guess I want to ask you, I know you've got a website. You post a lot of information on there. Agentfortruth.com, right?
Yes.
And I actually saw one of your, you did a webinar recently where you actually, I think you kind of went through, not necessarily the statutes, but I remember you were going through a lot of the case history and everything else that was really interesting. But my question for you is, do you do any consulting with people who are either they're trying to find a way not to pay income tax, or they're being pursued by the IRS and they, you know, whether it's past taxes or substitute files or late payments, whatever it is, do you do any consulting or working with people to kind of fix those problems for them?
I do, in the sense that I don't, you know, advertise, nor even when I'm talking person to person with someone, you know, say that I'm here to help you not pay your taxes or anything like that. Any help that I render is really just about providing information, shortening the time, because if you can, you know, as you can imagine, I'm sure, because you've already divulged that you've done a lot of research and you know how time consuming it is.
Yeah.
So if somebody, it might take them 20 hours to find something, a particular fact or group of facts, that I can send them a link and they can figure out in 15 minutes, well, then I've produced some value there. So in that sense of providing facts, information for people so that they can make their own decision, or people sometimes will contact me and say, hey, I'm thinking I'm educated enough now, and I'm thinking I want to, you know, take on the IRS, then I'll maybe kind of play devil's advocate and poke holes, or at least try to poke holes in their plan. And the nice thing I like about that kind of a consultation is, of course, all they're doing is thinking. At least that's not a crime yet, maybe on Facebook,
right?
But it's not a crime yet to be thinking like that. And so it gives them an opportunity to have somebody poke holes that isn't an IRS agent that's going to economically devastate them.
Right. And yeah, that's a really interesting point. And actually, so I've kind of, because I get people coming to me all the time saying, you know, oh, everyone goes to jail who doesn't pay income tax. I've kind of made an analogy, because, you know, they've even pointed out, you know, Wesley Snipes and Erwin Schiff. And I kind of came up with this analogy that's, you know, the first time the U.S. tried to shoot a rocket into space, it had people on it, and it blew up and they killed a lot of people because there wasn't an instruction manual. We didn't understand the laws of physics. But now, many years later, we launch people into space all the time and not many problems happen. Nobody dies. The laws of physics haven't changed, we just understand them better. And there's, you know, in the beginning, we didn't have a guidebook to all the laws of physics. We had to kind of figure them out. And it's kind of the same thing in dealing with the IRS, it seems, that, you know, a lot of people have been doing research. You know, Erwin Schiff especially has done tons of research. And you know, you can't just go to the IRS and ask them for their playbook. And, you know, like you said, you can't ask them, hey, can I try this? Because they're just going to say, oh, well, we know that you're going to try something. We know that you're delinquent on your taxes, maybe. So we're just going to start prosecuting you. Versus, you know, that's really interesting that you kind of have that perspective, you know, knowing that you used to work for the IRS. So, you know, all, you know, their playbook. And someone can come to you and say, if I went to the IRS with this, what would happen? I think that's really interesting. And I think that's a very valuable asset for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's, I mean, there are people in the country or people you can go to that you pay them a big sum of money and, you know, they'll make claims and promises. And then when the rubber meets the road and all of a sudden you're in a firefight and they're nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
And so I just don't think it's right to morally, you know, to try to push somebody into a battle that they're not ready to fight. So I more just try to paint a picture of what could happen. And of course, not to scare them unnecessarily. And by the same token, not to encourage them unnecessarily, but just paint a real picture that we all face. And of course, I can point to my own life. And, you know, I had my eyes wide open in 1999 when I resigned from the IRS, when they decided that they were not going to address any of my investigation or concerns. You know, I don't think I addressed that yet, but I brought up the culmination of these 2 years of off-duty research, and I didn't expect like a party or clapping for me, but the people that I presented my evidence to took the same oath to support and defend the Constitution that I did. And many of them had, you know, similar morals, or at least they claimed that they did. And so I thought that grudgingly, they may be grudging, but they would have to address these issues because they had a duty to do so. And they refused to and just told me, you know, there's the door and we're not going to answer any of your questions. And then instead of dealing with me face to face and in a professional, polite manner, and the fact that, you know, the government is supposed to be the servant. And I don't mean that in a demeaning way. But again, like I said at the beginning of the show, we've given them certain limited powers. And we have what's called a redress of grievances. And it's there for a reason, because government tends to overstep, you know, the powers that they were given. And so I attempt to redress those grievances. And all they do is hit me with enforcement and try to, you know, put me in prison. So I can speak from personal experience and knowing that it's, you know, nobody egged me on to do what I did. I did it of my own volition and felt that it was my duty to do so. And I want to make sure I give that same courtesy to my fellow Americans, that I'm not egging them on. If anything, I'm like a father or a mother talking to their, you know, son or daughter, who's sincerely asking them questions about, well, if I go to this college or I go to this college, you know, what will I expect? Or if I date this guy versus this guy, what will I expect? And, you know, just trying to give people the best real picture of the future, depending on which, you know, which steps they take.
So this is kind of interesting. We're kind of talking about when you found out and you confronted your supervisors, or superiors, whatever you call them, when they showed resistance to the claims that you were making, do you think that was like, do you think they're part of this, you know, grand conspiracy that they know and they don't care, they want to continue robbing people? Or do you think it was more like, you know, just kind of a human nature where they were trying to, they either didn't believe you because, you know, some sort of cognitive dissonance, or they were protecting their jobs, or, you know, just some sort of like, you know, irrational human behavior that was like, that was like, whoa, 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 whoa. If you shut down this whole operation, we're all going to be out of jobs. What's kind of your feeling about that?
It's a very, very good question. I would say that I don't ascribe any evil intent to my supervisors, but nor do I ascribe malintent to the people that you mentioned before when they say, if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to go to jail. This is a result of, in my opinion, you know, the cognitive dissonance that you mentioned that really results from, and these words might be a little harsh, but brainwashing, propaganda, repeated, you know, lies. They've hit their mark. This propaganda, this orchestrated message to the public. And so, if I could best read the minds of the, you know, my supervisors at the time, you know, some 18 years ago, it was that, wait a second, the only people that talk like you're talking are these knuckle dragging mountain dwellers that we call tax protesters. And so because you're talking like one of them, we are tuning out what you say, and we're not going to look at what you have, and we don't care how, you know, many accomplishments you've had here at the IRS over the last 5 years. We don't care how many awards you've won or how many agents would rather have you assisting them with their cases than any other agent, et cetera, et cetera. We're going to throw all that out, and we're just going to have this cognitive dissonance that you're not to be even listened to. And to me, that seems really not only outrageous, but it's just not rational. But, you know, again, when someone, all of us, and I've been guilty of it myself, you know, we've all been susceptible to that kind of, you know, brainwashing, for lack of a better term. And so that's, I really don't ascribe, you know, bad intent to people generally. I think a lot of us are trying our best. But I think where the rubber meets the road is, again, they had a duty, just like I felt I had a duty. And I never heard a good explanation as to why they didn't, you know, do their duty. I even talked to an agent years later, maybe 3 to 5 years after I resigned. And he said to me, oh, you know, I downloaded your report the day after you resigned, because I had put together this 90-page report. And it's online. People can go to my website, but it's for free. The agent said, well, I downloaded your report right after you resigned. And I said, oh, really? Did you read it? No, I never did. So that's kind of an illustration of what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's really interesting, though, that you kind of break it down to almost it's like a prejudice that's instilled in us. Like, you know, for a lot of people, I grew up in California, so you know, we were like, you know, it's a no gun state. I remember my friend brought a BB gun over one time, and I was like, oh my God, he's a criminal. He has a gun. And then of course I moved to Texas and everybody had guns. And like, at first I was just kind of like, well, this is weird. Because it was, you know, we had DARE officers come to our school and teach us, if people act like this, if they own guns, if they, you know, these are the type of people that you should be afraid of. And it sounds kind of like that's what you're describing, where if you say certain words or certain ideas, then you must belong to this class of people, which we already have this prejudice, and we already know who you are and what you are and how we're going to treat you. So that's a really interesting point.
Well, and you're illustrating it and pointing it out very effectively. And that's what we all, you know, we all can be susceptible to it in one way or another. But that's, and so I don't consider myself, you know, some guru who's not susceptible to, you know, those kinds of influences. But what I'm saying is that a lot of times, and I believe there are conspiracies going on. There always have been. So I'm not dismissing conspiracies, but by the same token, a lot of times it's just kind of a herd mentality. And the people that study this and have the money and the resources to guide the herd know exactly how to do it.
Right. And that's a good point, too, that I usually bring up when, you know, around conspiracies is, you know, the IRS employs, what, tens of thousands of people. They can't all be in on a conspiracy, because it's kind of like, you know, the more people you have who know a secret, the quicker it's, you know, somebody's going to have loose lips and let the secret out. Usually a conspiracy is gonna, you're gonna have a handful of people. So at the very least, you might have tens of thousands of people who are kind of blindly following orders because that's what they believe is right, because maybe, you know, a handful of people knowingly misled them. But I think that's a fair point. You can't have a massive organization like that where everybody knows without having, I mean, look at Edward Snowden. He knew something that a very, very tightly sealed organization was doing, and he was, you know, he was supposed to be a part of that conspiracy, and he leaked those documents. And this was like something this was an organization that nobody even knew existed, not unlike the IRS. So I think that's a fair point against saying that, you know, everybody involved is part of a conspiracy.
That's exactly right. And the workers, they don't, if there's any mal intent, not even intent, but let's just say if they're not doing what they should be, that's subject to the interpretation of the American people. You know, we all took the same oath at the IRS, and I believe that to adhere to my oath, I had to look into these claims, evaluate them as best I could with all my, you know, professional horsepower, and come to at least a preliminary conclusion, and then present it to my supervisors, because that's what even the IRS commissioner in memos to the agency would say. If you encounter fraud, waste, or abuse, speak up. So I read that memo and in others, you know, in Treasury rules of conduct, et cetera. And my conclusion was, I have got a duty to speak up. It doesn't matter if I'm afraid. It doesn't matter if I'm going to get chastised or I'm going to get transferred. I have a duty. Now, obviously, everybody else at the IRS doesn't feel they have that duty. And it's obviously up to the American people to decide, you know, who's doing their duty and who's shirking their duty.
Absolutely. Okay, so you sent me some documents. I want to take some time to go through some of those because they looked pretty interesting. You want to kind of walk me through these?
Sure. Now, you said that I won't be able to see them on the screen, so you might have to describe.
Yeah. So do you want to start with the websites first?
Sure. I think, let's see. I sent like one. Well, okay, one so of
the first one I've got is, it looks like your homepage. What's this all about?
Great. So what's this all about is kind of where people could start at agentfortruth.com. And I, again, trying to just give plenty of free information, shortening the time that it took me or other people maybe to try to get a handle on this issue, to try to shorten that period of time so that people won't get frustrated and give up. So what's this all about on the agentfortruth.com website is simply kind of a roadmap that people can follow to investigate more deeply.
Okay. Now I've got Bannister Badges and Guns.
The Bannister. Is that the picture family? The family there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, as I recall the picture, my mom is in the middle. Picture was taken right about 1993, I think, right when I started with the IRS, or maybe 1994. So my mom is in the middle. My dad had just passed away. Both parents were very big cheerleaders, you know, for their sons. So I think on the far left, if there's a tan uniform, that's my brother John. He just retired as a lieutenant from the California Highway Patrol. And then I think next to the right of John is Jeff in the dark uniform. He's the baby brother of the Bannister family, San Jose Police Department. And then my mom, and then my brother Jim. He's a battalion chief with the Daly City, California Fire Department. And I think I'm over on the far right with my little badge and gun there on my hip.
Yep, awesome. Okay, and then we've got the Citizens Police Academy.
Yeah, so one of the highlights, shall we say, or one of the reasons I really loved the IRS career is I was a federal agent, you know, a law enforcement person. Our jurisdiction, our authority was much more limited than I actually was told, but we'll set that aside. But in terms of basically taxation and money laundering is where IRS special agents concentrate. But I did what we called community outreach, and I volunteered with the East Palo Alto Police Department to do a citizens, they had a citizens police academy, and so I did a demonstration with a firearms training simulator. So that black and white picture was taken in the pitch dark, actually, of me doing this demonstration. So I wasn't trying to point a gun at anybody, but I was there doing a demo for citizens of East Palo Alto, California.
Awesome. Okay. And so let's see, I've got two PDF files here. One of them is one page, the other one's two pages.
The two pager is probably the verdict form from my trial. So you could probably just scroll through that and see four not guilty verdicts.
Yeah, as one count of the indictment of the violation of Title 18, Section 371.
Yeah, that's the conspiracy charge. And then you'll see three Title 26 charges, which is where they're charging me with preparing a false income tax return.
So now, were these the original four charges in, what was it, 2004?
A 2004 indictment, June 2005 trial.
Awesome. So yeah, this is really interesting to see, because I know there's, you know, when people start researching this, there's, I've been through it. There's, you know, when you get into some of this stuff, there's all kinds of rabbit holes you can go down. I remember researching the sovereign citizens, which they've got some. I mean, you know, they make some good points. But they make some completely, like, you know, crazy, they kind of take, they'll even sometimes take Supreme Court rulings and totally distort what their actual meanings are. They come up with some, you know, they kind of take a little bit of the truth and then they take it to an extreme. But it's, I always find it really interesting to see, you know, there might be a dozen articles about this case out there. Half of them are outright lies, that are, you know, trying to promote the propaganda that the IRS always wins. Half of them might just be completely confusing these cases for other cases. So it's always really good to actually see, you know, this document actually came from the court. Does this have a stamp? It has a signature on it of the I guess the head juror.
The jury foreman. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is, I mean, this is a historical document as far as I'm concerned. It's pretty impressive.
Well, you make a good point. You know, people, everybody, whether you're investigating medical issues or government issues or tax issues, you know, by all means, if people like myself or like Dan, if we're pointing out things to you, we may be able to help you shorten the length of time to get a fact by a great extent, and you can thank us for it. But, you know, check it out. Check out the original source. Don't just go with what we tell you. And that way you'll always be certain. So you make a good point there, Dan.
All right. So, and then let's look at, we've got one last PDF that is, I guess this is an email. De Leonardo Thomas.
Yeah, trying to think how I can do this. Well, first of all, I guess anybody that's watching this in the future can simply pause to read it, because it's there's quite a few lines there. But the background is this. The government's case against me back in 2005 was so weak or non-existent that they tried to get this Department of Justice trial attorney to testify that I had never not asked him certain questions, that somehow the fact that I did not talk to him about certain things was evidence of my intent to violate the law. So if that begins to give anybody any inkling, they want somebody to testify about what I didn't say or didn't ask, as opposed to what I did, they were already grasping at straws. But if you'll notice kind of in the middle of the body, do you see where it talks about what the DOJ or what this trial attorney claimed was my status in the tax community, the tax honesty
Bannister
community.
Bannister has consistently used the fact that the government has not responded to his requests as evidence that his position is correct and that the government is hiding the truth. Clearly, if all it takes is to have a sit-down discussion with him, I believe we should do it. However, I would recommend that only Bannister be given an audience. His associates are mostly notorious illegal tax protesters who would most assuredly be disruptive and uncooperative.
Yeah, so I encourage people to read the whole email, but the gist of it is that this trial attorney who worked in the Department of Justice sent this email to not only his colleagues, or at least he CC'd his colleagues, but he sent that to Ron Cimino, who was the chief prosecutor for the entire Western United States. And I might also point out a name that people might know in current events, Rod Rosenstein. He was actually the head of the Department of Justice Tax Division beginning in 2001. So Ron Cimino, who's the addressee on that email, Dally at some point worked for Rod Rosenstein, who's now in some hot water relating to the whole Trump-Mueller-Russia collusion situation. But the bottom line with that email is that Ron Cimino, this big wig in the DOJ, never even answered that email. And this was Tom DeLeonardo's sworn testimony in my trial, that Ron Cimino didn't say no. He didn't say, I don't know. He didn't say yes. He just didn't respond to his underlings' wow. request for comment whatsoever.
Interesting. So I want to, we're pretty much at time for today, but I did want to, you mentioned that the 90-page report that you presented when you resigned is available on your website.
Yes, at agentfortruth.com, people will find a bunch of different menu items, and there's links to the report. There's three parts to the report, and the second part of the report is probably by now it's not really copyrighted anymore, but as a courtesy, the second part of it is not free online, but that's not, you know, it's more just me as a courtesy to someone out to Bill Benson, who did the research relating to the 16th Amendment. But two-thirds of the report is available online for free, and people can get at least the gist. Also, my resignation letters are also, I think, important to read, so you can see what my motivations were 18 years ago, and, you know, you can evaluate evaluate my whole life, but certainly the last 18 years I try to keep put pretty easy to get to there at the website.
Okay, so I'm showing the website right now. So anybody who's interested, it looks like there's a lot of information in here, and I wouldn't expect any less. So it's agentfortruth.com.
Yes.
And yeah, so go check it out. And is there anything else? I don't know if you have any anything that you want to plug, any other websites or projects that you're working on.
Just that we do a radio show periodically with a tax attorney in the movement and a group of researchers. And so I believe there's a radio show menu item there at agentfortruth.com that links to archives of the shows. And we've dealt with withholding, with the constitutional definition of income, with the fact that the IRS values your labor at zero in order to perform some of the deceit that they do.
Right.
So I think for those that are willing to look at a little detail and, you know, kind of look behind the curtain, there's some good, you know, videos to kind of get your feet wet in terms of some of the lies that the IRS tells to the public.
Awesome. So definitely if you're, you know, if you're one of those people that's been sending me the questions of whether or not you have to pay your taxes, definitely go check out agentfortruth.com. Check out the radio show. Joe's definitely much more of an expert on the subject than I am, so he's gonna have all the really good information. I'm just kind of a flag waver for the movement to kind of end this corruption, and of course all the other government corruption that goes on. But yeah, so thank you for coming on the show, and hopefully we'll have an opportunity to do this again sometime. And until then, taxation is theft.
Maybe people could go to America Freedom to Fascism, search that on America Freedom to Fascism, the film. But thank you, Dan, very much for having me. I enjoyed it very much.
All right. I'll see you around.
Take care.